Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. Thanks so much for joining us this week. My quote today is by John Maxwell, and he says, "Leaders become great not because of their power, but because of their ability to empower others." You know, the saying goes, people join companies and leave managers. So why is that? Now, just want you to think for a second. Do you know people at work who have a title? It could be you're a VP, SVP, EVP, somebody that you report to, and think that they have all the power and are just the bomb, right? Now, you're picturing people right now. I know you are. So why do they think that they're so powerful? And is it the reality that their title gives them the illusion of this power? So what's really at play here? Probably the bottom line is some form of the ego. The problem with the ego is that the ego has no room for the success of others because it's all about them. So all my leaders that are tuning in today, I really want you to pay attention to what we're going to discuss or what may be causing some of your good managers and leaders within your organization to exit and look for alternate employment. Now, there may be too many big egos running around that are causing this exodus of talent so that they do go elsewhere, which is not a good situation. If this situation is happening at your organization, just stay tuned as my awesome guest, second time on the show, Janelle Jones, we're going to discuss how to park egos and retain quality leaders and how to work from the bottom up. And Janelle will explain that a little bit more in a minute. Now, Janelle is the CEO of Janelle Jones and Associates, and she specializes in two things, executive coaching and talent management, and has over 25 years of experience in human resources talent strategy. Now, she's been a talent management executive for over 15 years, and after running executive development for a top three pharmaceutical company, she decided to go out on her own and start her own business. Now, as an executive coach, she works with leaders so they can assess and enhance executive behaviors such as communication skills, leadership styles, and stakeholder management. Now, as a talent management consultant, she's an expert at creating impactful and practical solutions to address challenges. Now, this includes challenges with recruitment, development, success planning, succession planning, employment engagement, diversity and inclusion, and just so much more. So please help me welcome for the second time to the show my amazing guest, Janelle. So Janelle, thanks for so much for being on again.
Connie, thank you so much for having me back on the show. I had a lot of fun the first time, so I'm looking forward to this conversation today.
Yeah, this is such a good topic, leadership and management, and I think it's super important today because we certainly, as organization leaders, we want to retain, those quality leaders. So what made you pick the topic for today as we were discussing back and forth what to talk about, that bottom-up kind of strategy?
Yeah, so when you first reached out to me, I actually didn't know what I would talk about. But then I sat and I thought about the time of year that it is right now as we're taping this show and what people are focused on. I also started to think about the conversations that I'm having with a lot of my clients who happen to be very senior leaders of leaders who are highly successful, running organizations that generate multi-millions of dollars to billion dollars in revenue. And the challenges in many cases, as I talk to them, center around the fact that they are struggling to manage the relationship with their respective leaders.
Hmm. That makes sense. And that's a problem, right? Because if I can't talk up, I'm not getting things done, which is not,
right.
Then we're in a stalemate. So why are you seeing with your clients, why is this so important, or why did it kind of go ding, ding, ding for you as our discussion for today?
Yeah, well, leaders control your career trajectory. They control what your reputation looks like across the organization. So that means they also are controlling your personal finances, your retirement, your ability to pay for college tuition. because they control your merit increases, your stock options, the bonus that you receive. They make a big difference on whether or not you are able to buy that beach house down on the shore. And if you are strictly relying on what you've accomplished versus how you've accomplished the work, you're missing a big chunk of how you're being assessed and evaluated as a leader, and whether or not the environment you are working in is sustainable. And if the environment isn't sustainable, it can cause a lot more trouble for the individual. It can cause stress. It can cause an increase in blood pressure. There's a lot of emotional eating that I see within my clients so that they can kind of activate certain parts, pleasure centers of their brain. It impacts their weight. So there are so many other things that that relationship can impact.
Yeah. Why all of a sudden, or maybe it's not all of a sudden, I don't know, but why do you think this is an important topic to discuss now? Are you seeing more of this going on?
So again, as we record the show, it's December and most major corporations are in performance management mode. So that means that managers are sitting and thinking about the past year. What goals did we actually set for the organization? Did they obtain the goals? How did they go about obtaining the goals? So they're writing annual reviews for their respective teams and they are assessing their own performance and writing the narrative for their respective performance. So they may be figuring out, backing into their performance evaluations. Many of us, we set goals in the middle of the year. We get so busy that we put those goals away. And at the end of the year, we're backing into, did I achieve the goal? How did I go about achieving the goal? And you're trying to check the boxes, which means you may have missed some really important cues that were established in the past cycle. So it's really important that we get these leaders to think a bit differently on how they're going to approach these conversations as leaders and get really clear on what good looks like and manage their relationships with their leaders much more proactively.
So if, okay, so I work for a company, it's January 1st, I'm, you know, tugging along, and you're right, we start getting caught up in just our day-to-day stuff, right? Whether it's even personal and professional, we get on that treadmill, we start running. Should I, as a leader within an organization, should I start to keep records for myself so that I know what I did in, so in January, I know what I'm doing, and then in December, by the end of the year, and I, most companies, I think, Janelle, ask their employees to do like a self-evaluation. At least most of my clients do. So by the time that self-evaluation comes, I really should have my own track record in place because the person I report to may not even realize, right? Am I understanding that correctly?
Absolutely. So that's what's happening right now is they're reflecting on what did I do over the past year? What did I promise that I would do over the past year? In some cases, people keep those goals out in the open. They embed them in their calendars. They manage them like projects. And in some cases, the goals are such a long laundry list of things that you need to do. It goes in a file and it doesn't come out until December, which is tough. But with whatever that was written about them in their previous performance evaluation, there could be clues on what their manager is looking for from them over the year. And that could be a missing piece also.
So are you seeing certain challenges or recurring challenges that your clients face with their managers and leaders? Like, are there certain things that you see over and over and over again?
Yeah. So, you know, there are definitely things out there that make the work environment tough. From an inclusiveness perspective, you have things like microaggressions, and that is a snub that people might experience based on their membership of being in a marginalized group, right? So an example of that is I used to work for a commercial real estate firm, and I was asked, you know, about wearing dresses, and I basically said, I wear pinstripe suits so that I can avoid being asked for coffee. If I'm running a meeting and there is a man standing next to me, regardless of race, height, you know, level, role, they are going to be assumed to be the leader of that particular meeting. People who raise their voice when speaking to someone who is in a wheelchair or English is their second language, they can hear fine. you don't have to raise your voice when you're speaking to people. So then the next concept, of course, is micro inequities. And that's the more subtle message that can devalue people, and therefore it impairs their performance. So an example of that is someone who's running a meeting and they are only making eye contact with the other men in the room. Or, you know, I've had a number of times someone come up to me and say, "You're so articulate." And you're like, "Thank you. What, I'm not sure what you were expecting," right? Or someone who is running a meeting and they are constantly interrupting someone in mid-sentence. If someone expresses an idea, that's a great idea. No one heard it. 5 minutes later, someone else says the same exact thing. All of a sudden, it's a great idea. And you never really attribute it to the originating source. You know, so there are lots of things regarding that, and those are not necessarily purposefully done. They could be unconsciously done. So then we also go into the areas of unconscious bias, which you've probably heard of before. Yeah. But we all have biases, and a lot of that is based on how your brain operates. But the bottom line is, it's some of the biases could be on how the media portrays different groups. It could be based on your reference group and how your reference group looks at certain populations or groups, but something as simple as research revealing from an unconscious bias perspective that someone whose eyes are set wider apart and their face may lead a person to believe unconsciously that they're more intelligent. Many people don't even realize that that is an unconscious bias that they may have. So there are also things like covering. And what we found is that there are a lot of white males who cover. They don't necessarily bring their full authentic selves into the workplace because they're looking to fit in. So an example of that is someone who comes from humble beginnings, right? And they are standing among people who may have had privileged beginnings, and they're, you know, jokes being made about, you know, wrong side of the tracks, and they're laughing along and not able to articulate the fact that they didn't come from, you know, a family that had money, or someone who's in a corporate environment and they are in the right zip code, country club membership, but they are struggling financially to maintain that facade of, you know, well off. Feeling tolerated versus feeling celebrated. Those are all things that can make an environment tough. There are different preferences, different work styles, and then there are different challenges that are competing for the manager's time. So those are real challenges that a person can face, regardless of gender, regardless of race, regardless of, So those are all real challenges that people need to understand what's going on and what do I need to do to manage it.
And that this is a tough topic, you know. Recently, I started a third business with three other partners called the Roundtable Group. I don't know if we mentioned it in the last show, but it's all about breaking down that disrespect, on my word. Again, I know you didn't use that word, but disrespect in the workplace. And you're right. There are so many biases that we don't even know we have that showing up. And so now if I'm on the receiving end of that, you have no idea that you're treating me in such a way that I feel disrespected or where I'm not valued for whatever reason. And you don't even know that this subtle reaction is even happening, which is kind of tragic. And it's so funny, as you were going through your examples, I could tell you in my own career, either I've been affected or I've seen others affected with those exact examples. And it was funny, Janelle, as you were speaking, my husband and I in our previous home, we did big renovations. So we interviewed a few of the builders, and one gentleman came in. We're sitting at the kitchen table and, you know, he was reviewing. He looked at my husband the entire time. So as I would interject like a really good question, right? My dad's an engineer. So, you know, I grew up painting, doing oil changes on my car, changing tires on my cars. My dad made sure that we were competent, right? I know how to fix a toilet, you know, when the little chain in the back. So I'm pretty competent around the house. He did not even address me that I was in the room. So as he left, I looked at my husband. I go, and we won't be hiring him. And my husband just burst out laughing. And I said that he was so disrespectful in my home, not even to have the thought to look me in the eye. And literally, I asked the question, and he would look at you. Of course, he didn't get the business. I was so annoyed by him. But I don't even know, Janelle, now that you said that, did he even realize he was doing that? It's disrespectful to not address everyone in your room and to just maintain eye contact with the leader. These are little things that we really should be able to raise awareness and be aware of. I don't know. Do you find that people just aren't aware?
They're not aware. And so here's what's interesting. I study the work of the Neuro Leadership Organization, and they really do a great job of helping us to understand what's behind some of those behaviors. Mm-hmm. And it is a bit of how the brain operates. The more fresh information your brain is processing, the more energy it consumes and the slower your processing is. So that helps the brain to say, I really want some habits. I want some habits, and I want to put some things in a box or in a container so that we don't have to think about these things. We don't have to process these things. People say, I don't want to be put in a box, but we do put people in a box sometimes because it makes life easier.
Sure.
Similar to, you know, I put my car keys in the same place every single time I come home. That helps me not to have to look for my car keys before I leave every time I leave my house. It makes life easier. And these are the kinds of things that we would tell leaders to start doing so that you don't have to burn the mental energy figuring out certain things that you can just kind of not worry about. So if your brain is already looking for habits, your contractor, it sounds like, has already gone through this scenario and has processed it in a way where maybe in his mind, the money is coming from the male in the relationship. And so therefore, it's best to address the person who is in his mind paying for the project. And so therefore, as he enters into different scenarios, he hasn't adjusted for what the reality actually is. And so if he had asked a few questions of, you know, what is it that you would like, and gotten a sense of how often your husband is contributing to the conversation and how often you are contributing to the conversation, he might have realized that the questions and the information really need to go to a different person than what he's used to addressing. But he allowed the habits that he's developed to play out and therefore lost the business.
Yeah, and I'm sure, here's the thing. I bet he lost a lot of business because of that. My opinion, the way to remedy that is smack him in the face. No.
Do that.
I'm totally teasing.
And if you do, I want to watch.
He deserved it, let me tell you. But no, I would never physically harm anyone. Want to, but never actually do. And I think it would be frustrating. Now, obviously, after that guy, you know, after that contractor left my house, never had to see him again, never really had to think about him again until now, this conversation that it kind of sparked in my memory bank. What if I had to deal with that person every day? So right. What are some of the tips or ideas that you give folks so that they can remedy the situation or be active in how to change that perception? Because it's got to change.
Yeah. Well, you know, what happens in some cases is some of my clients don't necessarily understand that even though the behaviors that they are perceiving or experiencing are not the best, and they walk into our conversations with a hypothesis. I think that I'm being treated this way because of X. I do poke around and I do ask a lot of questions that helps them to understand what role they may be playing in this scenario, right? So are they helping their manager to perceive them differently? If there is a perception issue, are you understanding what their perception issue is with them as a leader and with their work? Not only what they're doing, but how they're going about doing it. Are they aligned to what the organization actually needs from them? We all have parts of our job that we like And we all have parts of our job that we don't like. So we want to focus on the stuff that we love doing. But are we making sure that there is alignment between what we're doing and what the organization or our leader needs for us to do? Because your leader does have a different perception of what's happening. And then is there any kind of messaging that that leader is putting out to you as a hint versus something that is, you know, being driven very clearly? The clients that I'm working with, I've helped them to understand that they need to find alternative ways to make sure that their leader is informed. Make no assumptions that they understand what you're doing, how you're going about doing it, what the accomplishments have been, how you're focusing your time, and make sure that your leader doesn't have any surprises. I have one case where one of my clients says my leader asks just an insane amount of questions, and I answer the questions, and then nothing ever happens with the information. Well, it's a behavior that may annoy you, but what you really need to study is why they may be asking those kinds of questions. When we pulled everything back and really looked at what was happening, it was because she was making a lot of assumptions that he knew what she was focused on, and that there were a lot of opportunities for him to be surprised by his leadership when he went into meetings with his manager. His manager would ask him a lot of questions that he would have to say, I don't know, because he wasn't getting that information from her. So finding ways to keep that leader informed and preempt all those questions that were coming her way was one of the things that she needed to deploy, and it actually did make a huge difference. Not just focusing on what's happening to me and how much does it annoy me, but why are they doing it? What are they exposed to that is making them do it? And how might I make sure I pull that away? Leaders have lots of insecurities. So observe the fact that your leader may have some insecurities and figure out what is causing them to be insecure. I ask my clients all the time, look around the room and see who they are migrating towards and see what behaviors those people are displaying for them to migrate towards them. Typically, it's because they are playing into the insecurity of the manager. The manager doesn't want to be made to feel incompetent, you know, less than intelligent. In a lot of cases, my clients who I am working with may be more intelligent than their managers. That is absolutely possible. Just because a person is your manager doesn't mean they're smarter than you, doesn't mean that they know more about the function than you do. But what it does mean is that you need to observe what's happening and you need to manage that relationship so that it's effective, because it does have an effect on your merit increase. So there are different behaviors that I ask my clients to take a look at. One of the conversations that I had as I facilitated a team effectiveness session is the fact that we have introverts and we have extroverts. And most people do mistake what that means. An introvert does not mean that I don't talk, or I am actually an introvert, but it doesn't necessarily mean I won't get in front of a room and speak. What it means is that the way I get my energy is through quiet time and alone time with my thoughts. That is how I solve problems. That's how I design solutions. Whereas extroverts, they get energy and they do their work by talking things out with other people. So if you can imagine you're an introverted leader just trying to work through some things, and your extrovert leader on your team comes to you and says, hey, I just want to let you know that I just made a phone call to so-and-so and here's what happened, and they take you down this whole rabbit hole, it is vexing for that leader. You're sucking the energy out of them. And while they do have to attend to your needs, sometimes you have to understand what you're doing to them, understand what their preferences are, and play into that. And that's a huge thing that a lot of my clients have never really stopped to observe, because they think you're the leader, so you should be understanding what my needs are. But as the direct, the way to get ahead is to understand what their needs are and to make sure that their needs are addressed.
Yeah, you know, the bottom line is we really do need to learn how to navigate basic communication skills. And it's just funny, the example you just gave. Yesterday I was teaching a class, and one of the components we were talking about is sales, obviously, and it's communication. How do I really connect with that client in front of me? So I started talking about different behaviors, right? You know, you're an introvert, I'm an extrovert, and that type of thing. So this one young lady, it was so interesting because I said, think of not only professionally, but sometimes we're more familiar with our family. So think of a family member who's maybe wired differently than you. And when you speak, where do you see the disconnect? And she was so funny. She said, you know, I love to give a lot of detail. And so she's a very descriptive detail, loves to go down the rabbit hole that you were just describing. And her mom is like, give me the big picture. I'm way up here. Just lay it on me. Give me the facts, Reader's Digest version. And what happens is sometimes her mom says to her, I just don't have time for you right now. Because the mom is probably just getting home from work, has 50 million things that she's got to do before dinner, and now the daughter's on the phone, blah, 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 and the mom's like, I can't even listen to you anymore. And the young lady said to me, you know, Con, I feel really bad. And I go, well, feel how exhausted you're making your mom feel, right?
Yeah.
And we both burst out laughing, and I said, before you get on the phone with your mom, just whatever you want to tell her, what happened during the day, whatever the kids did, whatever it is that you want to bring her up to speed on, get notes together, shorten your description, give her the highlights. And I says, and you'll see your mom will start shifting how she responds to you and won't be so abrupt to get you off the phone, because then she'll be like, oh, that's it? You know, waiting for you to give her more. But yeah, that's it. I just wanted to bring you up to speed. And I says, you'll see that certainly your relationship will change and your mother will start to gain more patience with you as you share, because you're not deep diving with all of this detail that she just doesn't care about. So it's the same. I mean, that was just a personal example that this young lady gave me. But, you know, I said to her, are you doing that with who you report to or who reports to you, where you get stuck in this spiral of detail and nobody else cares? That's your job to modify and navigate that so that you're always kind of communicating on the same page versus, you know, doing this when we communicate. So communication is important, right? And understanding that.
Yes, absolutely. Building rapport does require that you understand how that person is communicating and match it. And in these days, leaders are getting less and less resources to work with. So with the few headcount that they have, if the people on their leadership teams can understand what they need to do to match their leader's rapport from a rapport perspective, the more comfortable they feel about that person. So when you are communicating with that person, if you are able to match their, not just their style, give me the headline and then I'll ask you to fill in the details if I have time, or go right into the details and then we can build up whichever way their style might be. But there's also the level of energy. And so there's, you know, the New York City energy, really fast and high pace. And then they turn to that one person and say, so what do you think? And that one person says, well, I'm not so sure. And it just, you know, the energy just takes a plummet. So from an energy perspective, matching that energy level can sometimes help to enhance the rapport between you and your respective leader.
It's interesting. Absolutely. It's interesting you said that. I remember many years ago, regional colleague, and one day we happened to go out to lunch after a meeting. And at the end of the lunch, she said to me, you know, I have to limit my time with you. And I was like, oh, okay. And she said, you exhaust me. And, you know, so in my head, I'm thinking, and you're rude. I did not respond. And I was gracious. And I said, I understand. I do have a very high energy level. It's, you know, how I'm wired. I'll tell you, though, what a great comment. Because when I am around people who are just a little bit lower energy than myself, and now think about when I train, I have a mixture in the room, but certainly if I'm in front of a client and they have a much lower energy, I will reel in my energy, because it can be overwhelming and it can be exhausting, and because they're I'm pulling from them, they're not really hearing my message or understanding what we're trying to accomplish. It's so funny that that happened really early in my career, but what a valuable comment. And it's so funny, I still keep in touch with this woman. What a valuable comment. I took it seriously because I understood it and I worked on that. And can I tell you, Janelle, it takes effort for me to reel in that energy, because I wake up like a crazy person, you know, I have a lot of energy. So I am so mindful of that. So yes, communication, our energy, you know, are we pulling from people? Are we enhancing that relationship? And it is our responsibility. For me, how I communicate, whether it's up with my colleagues left to right or those that report to me, it's my responsibility to be the best I can be and how I show up. And you know, you were talking about biases at the onset of the show. I have to raise my awareness of those unconscious biases and work on that, because it's really unacceptable. At the end of the day, as a leader, it's just an unacceptable way to behave, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, from the bias perspective, it's natural to have them.
Sure.
But it is our responsibility to manage them to the degree that they become conscious.
Yeah.
And I also find it interesting that the person gave you feedback, and you were able to understand what that feedback meant. Many of us, we receive the feedback in the way that it was given, and it's an insult, and we walk away insulted, versus trying to understand, well, what does the feedback actually mean, and how does that person need me to adjust my behavior so that we can continue to get the best out of what we have for each other from the communication perspective. Saying, interesting, I exhaust you. Tell me more. What is it about our exchange that exhausts you? Because there are definitely people who come from a more stoic background who cannot deal with as much emoting as what some of us actually give off. I think it is both the responsibility of both people to try to meet each other in the middle.
Agreed.
So getting that perspective, getting more clarity on how they're experiencing your communication is definitely important. If they strictly said you exhaust me and they left it there, which a lot of leaders do, it's not helpful. It doesn't help you understand what good looks like for them.
Yeah, and again, our job is to turn around and ask more questions not to be insulted or hurt. Although, you know, initially, I have to be honest, I thought, well, like, you're such a pleasure to deal with. Of course, that's exactly what popped in my head. Like, can I turn around?
The way they communicated it was an insulting way of sharing that information.
Absolutely.
But if they said, you've got so much energy that I almost can't manage. I want to talk to you about how we might be able to communicate a little bit better. That would help you to understand what that person needs from you. But if they just left it there, I got to limit my time because you drained me, or, you know, however they said it. They're trying to give feedback, but the way they communicated, it did come across as an insult.
Well, you know what's sad, Janelle? We are not taught how to communicate to each other. And I laugh when I teach my little communication piece with sales. We take turns talking at each other. So that listening is truly an optional skill. And
Connie, I have got to tell you, and I just did it to you just now.
What?
But you made me think of, what we're doing is we are not listening to one another. We're trying to think of what our response is going to be. And oftentimes those responses don't answer the question. They are what I want you to know. And I just did it to you just now. But what you said is so true. And then I also gave an example. So thank you.
Yeah, no, and it's right. That's a really good example. And it's funny because, and you probably get this a lot too, I think just because of the business we're in, that you hone those skills. But people will say to me, you ask a lot of questions and they know it's because I'm interested, not because I'm being a busybody or pushy.
Yes.
But that's my sales skills at work, because for me to truly do a good job for my customers, whoever they are, I have to ask questions. Other shame on me for getting this much information to think I have the answer for them. The part two to that, though, that I've honed those skills over the past 36 years is when I ask a question, I truly go into listening mode, and because then you can think of follow-up questions to get even more insight into what's going on with that person. But I have to tell you, it's not an easy skill to develop. It takes a lot of work, and listening is hard because we're not taught how to do it. Now, do I think it's a critical skill? Exponentially so. And I think if we start just based on our conversation, people say, well, where do I start? Just start by truly engaging from a listening perspective. You will be shocked at how much you probably missed when you weren't listening. So just even, you know, I mean, there's so many avenues to take, and I'm going to give your website in a minute so people have a way to reach you to talk about how do I manage myself up, down, across, etc. But also, how do I develop these skills innately so I show up better at work, right? And so at the end of the year, let's start where we began. If I at this time of year we're doing performance evaluations and self evaluations, I'm bringing more to the table, more clarity to the table, so that I can be recognized and earn the merit and stock options or whatever it is that I'm trying to achieve in my career. So
absolutely. And during that conversation, it's important for you to ask the question, what does good look like? Yeah. How do I do this job successfully in your eyes? Document what that looks like. And embed it in your calendar so that you don't walk away and completely forget about it. When you have your one-to-ones with your leader, point back to the feedback that you got during your performance evaluation and said, hey, you gave me feedback that I don't give you enough information on certain clients. This is my attempt of doing it. And then after you do it, next follow-up meeting that you have with them, ask them how you're doing and create an environment where they can actually tell you how you are doing. Yeah. Take that information and continue to work on it.
Yeah. Demand to be coached, demand to be evaluated, not just annually, but every month, every time you have an opportunity. Don't drive them crazy. How'd I do? Like, don't be a lunatic about it. But make that an ongoing dialogue. We're out of time. Guys, if you are intrigued, and this is like another one of my favorite topics, right? Communication. Because that's really what we're talking about, communication at the core. Reach out to Janelle. Her website is JanelleJones.com. I want to spell Janelle for you. It's J-E-N-N-E-L-L Jones, J-O-N-E-S.com. Reach out to her via email if you have specific questions for her specifically. It's Janelle at JanelleJones.com. And it's just so funny, Janelle, that we talked about communication. My partner and I are still offering our free communication style assessment. And go to wisdomdecoded.com. Right on that landing page, you'll see the free link. Check it out. You get a little report, and you'll start, based on what Janelle and I even spoke about today, you'll start to understand how you're wired and how others in your orbit are wired. And strengths and challenges that come with it. You get a little report, which gives some really good insight. So again, wisdomdecoded.com. Again, JanelleJones.com, Janelle at JanelleJones.com, if you'd like to connect with my awesome, brilliant friend, Janelle. Thank you again for just another great show.
Had fun again. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and we should say, go back and listen to the previous show that I taped with Janelle, because we spoke about similar but very different topic that you can, again, just get a little more insight. And it's funny, Janelle, you really do articulate well, and not because you're a woman, you articulate, I know, right? I have to be careful how I say that. But you really articulate your thought, and then you always give such nice examples. And I think humans, I think we can understand better when you give a concept and then an example. People are like, oh, because we could reflect and think of situations. So I love how you articulate your concept, but you always bring those examples. So for me, I really do appreciate that.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Always awesome to hang out with you. Yeah, fun. Always fun. I hope you guys will join me weekly as we question build and discover together, just how to challenge ourselves and grow so that we can embrace change and just become the best that we can be, and whatever that means to you. Thank you all again. Thank you, Janelle, and thank you all for joining me. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, host Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. I wish everyone an inspired week, and please, please try to just listen, maybe just listen a little more. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman and Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, whitmanassoc.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.